along with a number of you. This past week, I went through a very profound life change. I took my only child to college. And as we were driving there, and she knew that this was supposed to be a bad thing for me, she comforted me in a way that I suspect very few kids comfort their parents. She said, "Don't worry, Dad. You'll work it into a sermon." So here it is. I'm not exactly an empty nester because I'm still there. But I understand the term, and what it made me think about, and what I told her about, in part on that drive to Santa Cruz, was that when I was 18 years old, after my first year of college, I had an invitation that proved, as you will see, to be very faithful, to come and work at Camp Ramah in Ojai, in California. Before that, I had never thought about coming out to California. But I had just finished my first year of college on the East Coast, and the problem was that I didn't have anywhere near enough money to get a plane ticket. I was working at Urban Outfitters. It's true. I've said this before. This is not relevant to the sermon, but I sold women's shoes. And the reason that I sold women's shoes is because I couldn't fold. And the only job that you didn't have to fold anything for, they stuck me in women's shoes. I sold more espadrilles than you can imagine. But in any case, I didn't have very much money. I mean, I was a college student. I certainly didn't have enough. We lived on, like, cans of tuna and peanut butter and chips. Lots of chips. My roommate used to say about me that I would eat any food that ended in an O. He said, Fritos, Doritos, as long as it's got an O at the end. But as a result, because I couldn't afford it, the only way that I could get out to California was they had this, I don't remember now how much it cost, $30 or $40, you could buy a one-way bus ticket. And for 4 days and three nights, I was on a Trailways bus that left from Philadelphia and ended up in Los Angeles. Along the way, you could stop and wash your hair in the sink of the lovely gleaming station. But that was pretty much it as far as amenities went. Two things, though, I remember from that trip. One was that there was a guy that I started talking to, and he was going off to Alaska to become a fisherman, and he invited me to come. And I could just imagine, he said, "You can actually make a good living as a fisherman in Alaska." I could imagine the letter home to my parents. I'm not going to Ramah. I'm dropping out of college. I decided catching fish in Alaska is my fate. And there was another, even more exorbitant offer, in a sense, extravagant offer, of a woman who got on the bus with her child, who was maybe 3 or 4 years old, and stayed on the bus for a day and got off somewhere in the Midwest and asked me if I wanted to get off with her and help raise her child. I didn't even have the chutzpah to imagine that letter home. In the end, I went to Ramah and kept going to Ramah for many years, and it was in fact at Ramah that I decided to become a rabbi. But here's what I thought about that. There are journeys, and there are also ideas that are appropriate to certain stages of life. They're completely appropriate. They're not wrong. They're just 18-year-old ideas. or 30-year-old ideas, or 50-year-old ideas, or 80-year-old ideas. And of late, I found in my journey that I've started to change one of my ideas. And I think it's partly a function of age, but it is partly a function of being a rabbi at a place for a long time. And it's an idea that relates to Yizkor because it's an idea about death. I know that Judaism is a tradition that treasures life. Ubacharta b'chayim, you must choose life. And again and again and again, rabbis, teachers, even political leaders talk about how the Jewish people treasure life and cling to life. I grew up remembering one of the most famous poems in the English language, which even people who don't know the poet and don't know the poem know a little bit about, which is Dylan Thomas's poem, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at the close of day, rage, rage at the dying of the light." And that's how I always believed it should be. That felt to me very Jewish. That we should rage against darkness and against death. When this year, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks put out a video about why I am a Jew, he identified this value as the central reason, because Judaism treasures life. I know that I and all of you, when we've suffered from cancer, everybody says you must battle against cancer. Cancer is always described as a war. And that feels very right. That somehow death is when you lose the great fight, but until then, it is our responsibility as human beings and as Jews to fight for this gift that God has given us. But guess what? Dylan Thomas wrote that poem about how old age should rave and burn and rage against death when he was 19 years old. He died before he was 40. And in the 19 years that I've been the rabbi of Sinai Temple, the same number of years that he lived when he wrote that magnificent poem, I have seen a lot of people die. And it has changed my ideas about death. Some have rage, but some have not. As I was writing this sermon, I remembered our friend, a member for many years, Dr. George Schechter. I remember what happened when he died. I was visiting him in the hospital, and he was very sick. And we had a long conversation, and in the course of the conversation towards the end, he said to me, "Rabbi, I wish you all the best and a good life. Mine has been a good life, and I will not see you again." The next day, he was gone. I realized there was something beautiful, spiritual, and powerful about acceptance, as there is about rage. The first death I ever experienced in my life was when my grandmother's sister Bessie died. I was a small child, I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. And what I remember from her death most clearly is that my grandmother, this was her only sibling, her husband had died young, was her lifelong companion, and when Bessie died, my grandmother tried to throw herself into the grave. And I remember my father restraining her. And even though it scared me at the time, I thought there was something magnificent in that rebellion against the dominion of death. But now so many times I have seen people say, "You know, She lived a beautiful life. And even though I was sad to let her go, there was something almost spiritual about those last few moments when we said goodbye. And I began to see things that I knew in a different light, especially a story that I first told long ago upstairs when I was the rabbi of the Young Professional Service, and some of you then were young professionals. I won't point, but you know who you are. It was about the death of Moses. And it was a story that was very dear to me that I remember I put in my first book, but I don't understand it now the way I understood it then. The story is that in the Torah itself, when Moses is told he's not allowed to go into the land of Israel, he protests, but he doesn't protest that much. And the rabbis who felt that this was not fair, that after all it was Moshe, and he had worked so hard to get into the land, he deserved to go into the land. They were upset with God, and so they wrote a whole midrash. It's a small book, actually, called Midrash Petirat Moshe, the story of the death of Moses. And this, in very condensed form, is what they said really happened when Moses died. When God told Moses that he was about to die, Moses couldn't accept it. And the first thing he did was draw a small circle in the ground and stand inside the circle and say to God, I will not leave this circle until you rescind the decree. Which, of course, is foolish. What's the creator of the universe going to say? Well, if you're not going to leave the circle, my hands are tied. So this goes on. Moses realizes that all these techniques can't sway God. And in fact, Moses prays and his prayer is so powerful, say the rabbis, that God sends angels to lock all the gates of heaven so that Moses' prayer can't get through to him. And then finally, Moses makes his plea. And he looks up at the heavens and he says, Ribono Shel Olam, dear God, this is me. This is Moses. Don't you remember how you took me when I was little more than a child? And you said, I will take your hand and I will put the words in your mouth. And together, Moses, we will work signs and wonders and miracles and liberate this oppressed and despised people. And we did it. And we brought them out of Egypt. And we took them into the desert where you gave us your word and your will and your law. And for 40 years, I fought with this people. And there were betrayals and there was anger. But I led them through the wilderness because it's what you wanted me to do. And now I can see the land. And all I want is one more day. Just to walk on the grass, just to smell the earth, just to stand in the land that I dreamed of for so long. Please, God, give me that time. Don't let me die. And now, at the end of the Midrash, something happens that has not happened up to now, which is God answers Moses. God says, Moses, you are a human being. And all human beings die. When Moses hears that, he lies down and he folds his arms across his chest and he closes his eyes. And then the Midrash ends as follows. It says, and God came down from the highest heavens to take away the soul of his servant Moses. And God took away the soul of his servant Moses with a kiss. And God wept. I always understood that as a story about God. That God weeps for us. That God cares for us. That even though the world is set up so that we die, it pains God. But now I understand that the rabbis wrote that story. And the rabbis don't identify with God. Even though they have a view of God, they identify with Moses. Because they were human beings. And what strikes me reading it now, older and having gone through lots of things that that kid on the bus could not have imagined, is that at the end of the story, Moses accepts what God says. He lies down, he closes his eyes, he folds his arms across his chest, and he awaits God's kiss. He knows that death is, in fact, the inevitable fate of every human being who has ever lived. Even Moses. And realizing that doesn't take away Judaism's love of life. But it adds a different dimension. One of the most common heartbreaking calls that you get as a rabbi, almost once a week, is my loved one is lying and strapped into machines. What do I do? And there is no blanket answer, and I don't want to pretend there is one. But there is not a single value either. Struggle is not the only value. Rage is not the only response. Acceptance. Acceptance is also a response. Understanding that Moses' end is ours as well, that's also a Jewish response. And I want to close by bookending a different poem by a very different sort of poet. Hillel Bavli was born in Lithuania in 1893. He was fortunate to come at the beginning of the century to the United States, where he was a professor of Bible at the Jewish Theological Seminary for 40 years, but he was also a Hebrew poet. Bavli died older than Dylan Thomas, but not very old. He was in his late 60s when he passed away. And when he was dying of cancer, he wrote a cycle of seven Hebrew poems. And I want to read you the first and last lines of Bavli's poem, Zot Tefilati. This is my prayer. This is what he wrote. This is my prayer to you, my gentle God. Let me not stray from my life's course. Do not let my spirit fall into decay, and may it never cease to thirst for you. And when my day shall come, let me slip into the land of night without asking anything from others or my dear God, from you. I understand the rage of youth, but I understand the acceptance of age. I don't think that one is wrong and one is right. I think that one is appropriate for a certain time and situation, and the other for a different time and situation. Those who are dying have the greatest opportunity of any teacher. They can teach us how to accept something that will happen sooner or later to all of us. And when it is inevitable, to accept God's decree in this world with sweetness is a gift, not only to the soul that is leaving, but to the souls that remain. So I hope that we are privileged to live lives that can teach others how to live and to pass from this world in ways that can teach others how to die. To go gently into that good night is a blessing. And although we pray each year for another year of life, and we wish for it, and we hope for it, none of us can ever know. And so we accept God's decree for whatever it may be, and know that both in life and in its end, it is possible to feel blessed.